Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming to this talk, From 4 to 40 Inches, Developing Windows Applications Across Multiple Form Factors. And welcome to the last day of TechEd. I hope it's been a great conference for you. My name is Peter Torr. I'm a program manager on the Applications Developer Platform team at Microsoft, previously working on Windows Phone, now working in the Windows organization. And today we're going to talk about building apps that run across all sorts of devices. And this is becoming increasingly important because as we look at the kind of devices people are using, they range across the board from small phones to large electronic whiteboards to laptops to all-in-ones to phablets, all these different kinds of devices. And as developers, we don't want to have to think about targeting each one of these devices individually, writing specific code for each device or writing specific UI and layout for each device. And what we want to do is have a single set of UI components that can scale across all these different devices. And so that's what we'll be talking about today. Now, at a simplistic level, you can say, well, if I have a bigger screen, then that means that there's more pixels on that screen and I can show more content to the user. That might be right. And you also might say that if I have a higher DPI display, that means I have more pixels, and that means I can show nicer graphics to the user. And again, that might be right, but there are nuances to both of these statements, and there's quite a bit of complexity hidden in here, which we will talk about today. And it's understandable, because as a consumer, when you buy a television, or when you buy a monitor, or when you buy a phone, you look at the marketing information and you say, I want a 1080p phone, I want a 4K television, I want an 80-inch television, right? These things are important to us as consumers. But as developers, we don't want to worry about these things because they just cause more problems than they're worth. And we'll talk today about how you can kind of abstract away all this information about size and resolution and density and really just focus on building applications that work across all these types of devices. Now, before I do anything else and talk about all the new stuff that's in Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1, et cetera, I'm going to do a very quick demo. Has anyone here got a existing Silverlight application in the Windows Phone store? Anyone? Okay, no one here. But for the people watching the video, I'm going to do this demo anyway, because they might be interested. So this demo is actually very, very boring. It is going to show that when we take a Silverlight application, an existing application, and upgrade it to Windows Phone 8.1, nothing breaks. Because we're obviously interested in preserving people's investments in applications. And what I'm going to talk about for the rest of the talk is how applications can take advantage of these different types of devices, but for existing legacy applications, they don't know how to do that, and we don't want to break them. So this very simple application I'm going to run here is a Silverlight 8.0 application for Windows Phone. And this is running on a 6-inch emulator, so this emulator is pretending it is a 6-inch 1080p phone. And we can see here it's running Windows Phone 8.1. And the application thinks it's running at 480 by 853 pixels. And that's basically the standard that we tell all Silverlight applications. So that's what it sees. If the developer goes and looks, they can discover that it's a 1080p phone, but that isn't exposed by default. By default, the developer sees 480 by 853. So if I go into my application here, and I right-click, and I say retarget to Windows Phone 8.1, that is going to go and upgrade the application to Windows Phone 8.1, so I can use a lot of the new features in Windows Phone 8.1, new Windows runtime features, new native code features, etc. But when I run it, again, on the 6-inch emulator, I go to run the application. It's building. It's running. It still thinks it's 480 by 853. Right? So the point here being that if you had an application, for the people watching the video, if you had an application in Windows Phone 8 and you upgrade it to Windows Phone 8.1, we're not going to go and break all of your layout and suddenly make your phone think that it's on a larger device. So that's all I'm going to talk about old code. For the rest of the talk, we're going to talk about new code, what we can do with the new universal applications. So let's go back to the slides. And quick recap of that. If you have Silverlight applications, it's a friction-free upgrade. You don't have to worry about redoing your UI. You can opt in to supporting larger screens. So you saw in the bottom half of that application, it did know it was a 1080p phone. And there is a blog post about how to do that and some sample code that helps you do that at this URL here. And of course, it is only available on Windows Phone OS. So if you're wanting to build applications across phones and tablets and desktops, Silverlight isn't the choice for you. You'll want to work on universal apps, which is what we're going to talk about. So as we move into the new universal app world, and we talk about these different devices, I'm going to split the discussion up into two halves. And they're, for the most part, distinct. On one half, we'll talk about layout and what that means to an application. And in the other half, we'll talk about assets. And when I say layout, I'm talking about the number of elements on screen, their relative position. Are they laid out side by side? Are they laid out on top of each other? That kind of thing. How many items in a list box? How many pictures in a grid, for example? And assets, of course, are images like graphics, video, GIFs, whatever you want to put there. And these are relatively independent topics, although there is one place where they kind of merge together. And we'll start out with layout, and we'll talk about the physical size and shape of your application. And from there, we will talk about the viewing distance that people have when they view your application. And from viewing distance, we will talk about this concept of effective resolution. And this is the key part of the talk about how you can actually have these apps that scale across all these devices, is this notion of effective resolution. After that, we'll talk about detail level in assets. We'll talk about scale factors of assets. And finally, mastering of assets. So that's the way we're going to structure the talk today. So starting with physical size, I have here a list of all the, a lot of the devices from 4 inches to 40 inches to scale. And you can see there is a vast diversity here. And obviously, the 4-inch device is 10 times smaller in each direction than the 40-inch device. And you'll notice that although I put the sizes on here, I didn't actually put the resolutions on here. I didn't tell you if it was a 1080p 24-inch display or a 480p 4-inch phone. And that's because size and not resolution is what actually matters most when we're building applications. And back to what I said earlier about when you're a consumer and you're thinking about the marketing of things, you want to know, is it a 1080p phone? Is it a 4K television? But resolution is actually, the actual resolution of the display is not that important to you as a developer. It's the size that matters. And also, if you're a phone or a tablet developer currently, you might think in terms of orientation, right? My phone is in portrait mode, or my phone is in landscape mode. My tablet is portrait, or my tablet is landscape. And that works okay for phones and tablets, except for things like Windows tablets, where even though the tablet is in landscape mode, if I have two apps snapped side by side, they're not really wide anymore. They're kind of square. And if I have a 37-inch desktop monitor with 4 applications snapped side by side, even though the monitor is landscape, they're all tall and thin, as if they were in portrait mode. And so we want to get away from this notion of portrait versus landscape, which is tied to the device itself and doesn't really talk about the application's layout space. And so we want to think in terms of relative shapes of my app. Is it tall? Is it wide? Is it square? So shape and not orientation are what is more important when building applications. Okay, so that said, I'm going to show you a little bit of a demo now of a very simple app, a tic-tac-toe application, that just illustrates some of these concepts. I won't show you the code just yet. We'll look at the code a bit later on. But I just wanted to show you the app and how it deals with these kinds of things. So if I switch to the laptop. And run the application. So here we are, tic-tac-toe, obviously a very simple application. I wanted to do something simple so it wasn't, the details of the app didn't bog us down. Basically here I have an application, I can create a new game, I can click start, and I can start playing the game. So a very, very simple tic-tac-toe application. And as I change the size of the application from wide, you'll notice that this information here, like my time, is on the right-hand side. And as the size, as the shape of the application changes, now it's kind of a squarish shape, we've moved the information to the bottom because it doesn't make as much sense to keep it on the side. And as I make the app smaller and smaller, now you'll see this is adapted to be into a two-row configuration because it couldn't fit the entire data in a single row. And as I make the app as small as possible, it goes back into a single column view, and the grid, the game grid, always just kind of takes up as much space as it can. And if I finish the game, and yes, X wins, you'll notice here back at the main menu, it works in this very thin view with no heading. As I make it larger, the text gets bigger, the buttons get bigger, the heading starts to appear. As I make it larger again, the heading gets bigger, the margins get bigger, the content gets bigger. Right. So this application is adapting to the shape that it's in and the available size that it has. It doesn't care about resolution so much, it cares about size. And the same application can run on phones, because I'm using one of these new universal applications. So if I switch to my 6-inch emulator and run the app, and my 4-inch emulator and run the app, here they are side by side. I can create a new game. I can do all these things. And this is all the same code basically running across the Windows, PC, the 6-inch phone, the 4-inch phone. And the UI is adapting to the available space. And like I said, we'll get to the code in a little bit to figure out how it's doing all of this. But this is what this is kind of what adaptive UI looks like. Right? Same components, same UI, same code, just dealing with the size and shape across these different devices, not worrying about the 1080p versus the 768 versus the 4 inches versus the 10 inches. So that's a quick demo of the app. We'll look at the code in a minute. Now, we've talked a bit about physical size and shape and seen the demo. Next, we'll talk about viewing distance, which is a very important topic when we think about these different devices that we're all using. And we have a confused person here who's thinking that if a phone like this, we say, is about 800 pixels wide when I hold it in landscape mode, and it's 4 inches approximately, does that mean that when he goes and buys a 40-inch television, that it's going to be an 8,000 pixel device? And I see some people in the audience shaking their heads. And he's really concerned because he just upgraded to a 4K TV, which he thought was the best available, and that's nowhere near 8K 8,000 pixel resolution. And of course, the answer is no. 40-inch televisions aren't 8,000 pixels wide, and neither does Windows think that a 40-inch television should be 8,000 pixels wide. And to understand why, we just look at some very basic geometry that many of us probably learned in high school or college. So this is a picture of a human eye, and it's looking out into the world. And simple geometry and experience tells us that if we look at an object that is a certain distance away and is a certain height, it takes up the same viewing angle as something that is twice as far away and twice as high. Right? So something twice as far away but twice as high appears to be the same size as something closer. Like far away things seem smaller than they really are. And to put this into kind of the perspective of the talk, if I have this 4-inch phone, approximately 4-inch phone, and I put it next to a 40-inch television and I sit 10 feet back, it's going to look very, very small, right? But as I bring the phone closer to my face, as I would normally hold it, my 4-inch phone ends up looking the same size to me as my 40-inch television, right? So they take up the same angle of view when I'm looking at them. And this is a very important concept that we use in order to help you build apps across phones, tablets, PCs, etc. So that's viewing distance, and that's how viewing distance plays into things. And this leads us to effective resolution, which is our key point, the culmination of the layout part of the talk. If we have a 4-inch phone at 1 foot being the same angle of view as a 40-inch television or a 40-inch screen at 10 feet, then we can say they have the same effective resolution, right? You'll notice I haven't talked about, you know, 1080p versus 720p versus whatever. I actually don't care what the phone is or what the television screen is. All I know is that given this basic rule of geometry, whatever the effective resolution of the phone is, right, and we can define effective resolution however we want, then that TV has the same effective resolution when the user is viewing it. Now, there are other differences that might come into play. For example, interaction models. On my phone, I'm touching, and on a television, I might be using Kinect or a controller. So certain types of apps have different considerations other than just viewing distance. But in terms of general layout, this effective resolution is what is the key point of layout in Windows. So effective resolution embraces the concept of viewing distance. And so now I need to correct something I said earlier. So earlier I said that the sizes of these devices mattered and not the resolutions of them. And I was telling a bit of a lie because we hadn't talked about viewing distance yet. What really matters is the effective resolution of a device or an application's window, not its physical size. So you'll see here that as we switch back between size and effective resolution, that top left 4-inch phone here, which looks very, very small compared to the 40-inch television, is actually quite a bit larger when you think about it in terms of effective resolution, right? That smallest rectangle has now grown much larger because it's held much closer to your face than something further away. And these particular resolutions here don't necessarily map to particular devices. These are just examples of effective resolutions you might see. So by talking in terms of effective resolution, we reduce the number of things we have to worry about when we're trying to target our applications. We don't care about the physical size of the device. We don't care about the viewing distance of the device. We just care about the effective resolution that Windows presents to us. So with that information, let's go ahead and look at how this tic-tac-toe app actually works and deals with effective resolution. So the first thing I just want to show quickly is, I mentioned before, this is basically all shared code and all shared UI. This is using one of our new universal projects that lets you build a Windows app and a Windows Phone app using a bunch of shared code. And this particular demonstration is, this particular app, excuse me, it was written in C# and XAML, but the same concepts apply if you're using Windows web apps, so using JavaScript and HTML. I just chose to do this demo in C# and XAML. And you can see here, if we zoom in a little bit, that I have basically inside the shared project here, I have all of my UI. I have my game board. I have my in-progress status. I have my menu. I have my net game setup. I have my settings. I have everything defined in the shared product, in the shared project. And then the Windows application node and the Windows Phone application node just consume these components and stick them into higher level pages. So all my UI is shared. So here's for example, the game board, here's the stats, here's the menu, et cetera, et cetera. And let's go ahead and look at one of these things in Blend, which is the design tool that we use for Windows applications. I'm switching to Blend because Blend has this cool feature called Visual State Management, and that's what I'm going to use here to show you how the application changed the size of the margins, the size of the text, and those kind of things that I showed you earlier when we were playing with the application. So here we have our main application in the designer, and if I click to the Visual States tab here, you'll see I have four states. I have wide, square, thin, and rail. And they're just names I chose. You can choose whatever name you want. And if I switch between them, the default is wide, which is what you see here. As I move to square, you'll see that the margins changed a little bit. And the text got a little bit smaller. And this is what would happen as the application got smaller. If I move to thin, you'll see that things got smaller again, the margins got smaller, et cetera. And as I move down to rail, the title disappears altogether, and the margins are really thin. And if this display was actually getting smaller and smaller, watch the main menu buttons, the new game, resume, et cetera. As this gets smaller, they also get smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's because this is nested control, which has a similar set of visual states that it switches to based on how much size it has available. And not only does this happen to work getting thinner like this, but if I select this control and make it wider, you'll notice that it now goes into a two-column configuration. Right. So using the same notion of these visual states that we switch through, this control can take advantage of its available size and available shape in the most appropriate fashion. And if we look at the main menu here, this is the control that was inside the page. We'll see it also has some visual states. It has the here's the vertical view and the horizontal view for the different layout of the buttons, depending on whether it was a wide shape or a tall shape. There's also a couple of other states it switches to based on some of the UI differences between Windows Phone and Windows PCs and tablets. So, for example, there's a settings button here. And on Windows Phone, we show the settings button because Windows Phone doesn't have a charms menu. Right? So when we're on a Windows Phone, we show the settings button. But when we're running on a Windows PC, which has the charms menu, we hide the settings button and we just have some text that says swipe in and choose charms. So visual states are used to map not only between the available size, the available shape, but in this case, I'm also using visual states in my shared control to deal with some of the UI nuances of phones versus PCs. So that's how the UI can change, is by these visual states. And you might be asking, well, how do we map the effective size of the application to the UI states? You saw when I dragged the control bigger and smaller, it changed visual states. And you might be wondering how I did that. Well, there is a library that I have that I wrote. It's posted on my blog. There's a link at the end of this article. And it's basically a rules-based layout system that lets you map from various things like the size or the shape of your UI into visual states. So if we look at the main page for... This is the main page for the Windows application. You'll notice, again, just talking about the universal apps, if I look at what's in my Windows application, there's only one XAML page. And it contains all those other things, the settings, the main menu, the game, all those things are contained as sub-controls inside here. So I really am reusing all of that shared code. And the way that it knows to switch between these different layouts is that I'm using this thing called a width go to visual state rule. And again, this is something that's in the library that I have. It's posted online. There's a link to it later. You can use it yourself. And what this says is evaluate these rules every time the control or the page changes size. And has a series of rules. The first one says, if my width is greater than or equal to 1,200, and now this isn't 1,200 physical pixels, this is 1,200 effective pixels, right? So regardless of whether this is a television or a phone or a laptop or a PC or whatever, 1,200 effective pixels, it'll switch into the wide state, right? So it'll have the maximum margins, the maximum font sizes, all that kind of stuff. If the width is greater than or equal to 700, it'll switch into the square mode. If it's greater than or equal to 400, it'll switch into the thin mode. And then there's a last ditch attempt. If it's not even greater than 400, it'll switch into that rail state. And so using these very simple rules, you can say, you can give this to your designer, for example. If you have a designer working separate from a developer, the designer can do all these things without writing any code. And they can do the visual states in Blend. They can set these rules in Blend. And it's a very easy way to have these UI components be very dynamic and take advantage of the space that's available to them. And the main menu, if we look here, has a very similar thing. If I zoom in a little bit, it has, width greater than 900, do this. Width greater than 600, do that. Width greater than 400, do the other. So this is all based on these rules. There's no code involved once you use this library, and it all just works. So that's how we can get these UI applications to scale across all these different devices, and I never worried about the size of the device or the resolution of the device. And if you were building a Windows web app using HTML and JavaScript, you might use things like CSS media queries to specify, within this width, run these particular rules. Within this width, use these particular rules. So this is a XAML way of doing it, and HTML and JavaScript and CSS have their own way of doing it. But the same concepts apply. So, a quick recap of what we just saw. When you're building adaptive apps for Windows, it's really, really key to think in terms of these reusable components, right? So don't start off laying out your entire page with all of its content on a big, you know, on a big design surface. Start by thinking about what your indivisible units of content are, right? The main menu, then the setup menu, then the control grid, then this, then that. Build these shared UI components, and then you can just reuse them inside the Windows and Windows Phone apps and not have to worry about rewriting the code or the UI twice. Right? We put them into these platform-specific pages. The Windows app had exactly one page, and it dynamically switched between the different controls. The Windows Phone app has, I think, three pages, mostly because we don't have that settings built in for Windows Phone, so there's a separate page for settings, and there is a... because of the nice animations that we get when we switch between pages in Windows Phone, and we have the hardware back button, it put controls on different pages just to fit in more with the personality of Windows Phone. But they could have all been put on the same page just as Windows. We're going to adjust our layout based not on resolution, not on physical size, but on the available size and shape that's given to us in effective pixels. And you know, for those of you that know MVVM or MVC, separating your view and your content, your view and your model won't hurt, right? That's a really great way to be able to build these dynamic UIs and not have to worry about having a lot of this hard-coded into your model. So that's basically it for layout, right? Effective resolution is the key thing when thinking about objects on the screen. How many you have, what are their positions relative to each other? And now let's talk about assets and how important they are to applications and how you should think about building assets. So I'm going to start with this picture here. Now, does anyone know what this picture is? No? No one knows? Okay. What about if I show you this picture? Who knows what that is? You can say it. Yes, okay. It's the DVD logo inside Windows Explorer. And this is the same image that you saw on the last page, but it's shown in all its glory. It's shown with its full detail at a nice large size. And you can see it's kind of photorealistic. It has shadows and highlights and all this kind of good stuff. And it looks really, really good at that size. And if we scale it down a little bit, it still looks pretty good, right? I can still see the shadows and the highlights and the text and so on. But as it gets smaller, all that detail, all that fine detail, starts to get mushed together because there aren't enough pixels there to actually see what's going on. And if you didn't have the first two images as context, you probably wouldn't be able to understand what that third picture was. And as we squish it down even more, and this is the picture you saw on the previous slide, just blown up, you end up with just a mess of pixels. And it's impossible to know what that fourth image is. Right? Without the context of the first two, you don't know what that fourth image is. And the thing here is that it's the size of the image, right, a big image versus a small image, that is will determine how much information I can put into that image, how much detail I can put into that image. And as the images get smaller, we actually want to switch to a different representation. So here, when Windows Explorer does this, once you get to a certain size, Windows Explorer gets rid of the photorealistic DVD and puts in this kind of hand-drawn, lower resolution, lower detail image, which is easier for you to see and easier to recognize. And so if you're building an application like this, you might ship two images in your app. A large image that has a lot of detail and is used when you have large images on the screen, and then a small image that has much less detail and is used when you want a small representation on the screen. And the key point here is that it's the effective size of these images, right? Is it big or is it small? That is going to drive how much detail you put into those images. You don't want a very big image to have low detail because it will look blurry and ugly. And you don't want a very small image to have very high detail because it will look blurry and ugly, right? You need to pick the right ones for the right contexts. So that's detail level. Detail level is derived by effective size. Now, let's talk about scale factors, which you might have heard about on Windows or on things like iOS and Android. This is the letter D from that DVD image in the previous slide. And it's running at a particular resolution or a particular density. And we can see that it looks kind of ugly, right? It's very pixelated. The gradient isn't very smooth, etc. And if we put it on a display that's twice as dense, we get a much crisper UI, right? The gradient is smooth, the corners are more rounded, the anti-aliasing is looking a lot better. And this is a higher quality image, right? Apple popularized the idea of retina displays, right? Doubling pixels. That's the kind of thing that's happening here. But I don't need to tell you what the DPI of the left one is and what the DPI of the right one is. I just tell you that one is twice that of the other. And you know that the one is going to be better than the other one. And it's important that to think here that relative density, right, the right one was twice as dense as the left one, is much more important than DPI. For example, this back to the 4-inch phone versus the 40-inch television, this phone has a density of, I don't know, 200 or 300 dots per inch, right? But my television at home probably has a density of about 35 pixels per inch. But they will show but a television that has twice as many pixels that far away will only have 70 dots per inch, which is still far less than this, but the perceived image will be twice as crisp, right? So again, DPI, physical DPI, just like physical resolution, is not really important for most things. What you really care about is how dense it is relative to some baseline. And this is also called scale factor in some places, or resolution scale in some places in Windows. And it's DPI scaling, or many different terms used in the industry. But it's all about relativeness. One is twice as dense as the other, or three times as dense as the other. And this brings me to my Photoshop dialogue. Anybody here use Photoshop? Okay, some hands going up. So if you create a new image in Photoshop, you see a dialogue like this, and you know, it wants to know the name and the width and height, and they're all good. And then there is this thing that says resolution, and it wants you to say how many dots per inch or pixels per inch you want to put into your image. And with two exceptions, you should ignore this value when building assets for Windows and Windows Phone, and other platforms too, really. The two exceptions are if you are building an image to print out onto a physical piece of paper, then you care about this, because that, you know, if you have a 300 DPI printer, you want a 300 DPI image. If you have a 600 DPI printer, you have a 600 DPI image, et cetera. So if you're printing something out onto physical paper or whatever, DPI matters. The other place where DPI matters is if you've been working with a designer and the designer has given you some comps and they say this particular thing here should be 72 points or 100 point font or something like that, and they've given you text in font sizes, sorry, in point sizes, then you need to know what value they put in Photoshop when they wrote that text, because this will determine how big that looks to them, and then when you're building the assets, how big it looks to you. But if you're not printing it out and you're not working on designer comps where they had a specific DPI set, you can ignore it. You don't have to put 96 DPI to match a desktop monitor. You don't have to put 250 DPI to match a phone. This value is completely meaningless to basically everybody, except the printer and to the font sizes you got from the designer. So don't stress about this value. Just leave it at whatever the default is and go on with your life. So let's take a little look at detail level and scale factors when it comes to building apps in Windows. Now, for this particular demo, I'm going to switch to HTML and JavaScript. So the previous demo was C# and XAML, and I said that the concepts apply equally as well to JavaScript and HTML. This demo is going to be HTML and JavaScript, and the same concepts apply to XAML. So everything applies to both. I just wanted to show you two different demos. And my web skills are not as good as my XAML skills, so if I go ahead and run this application, you will see that it's not a particularly engaging application, but imagine that it was. And I have here a logo, and this is the logo for my tic-tac-toe game, very stylishly created. And it's shown at its full size here. It's got some kind of pseudo 3D, some shadowing, some, you know, fine outline text and stuff like that. And, you know, it looks okay at this particular resolution. You might not think it looks pretty, but you can tell what it is, right? It's a tic-tac-toe board, and it's some text, and it looks pretty good. But if I go ahead and there's another place in my application where I need to show an image, a logo, and I take that same logo and just squish it down, just like that DVD image, this thing starts to fall apart. Right? We don't have enough pixels to show the fine lines, the fine detail, and you end up with a blurry mess where the lines start disappearing, and it's just unreadable. So we want to go ahead and create a new asset to use at the smaller physical size. And we're going to go ahead and do that in Photoshop right now. So let's go ahead to Photoshop. And here is my logo in all its glory. And what I want to do is obviously not completely redesign my logo, because I'm really happy with my logo. I like the blue board and I like the orange text. But I know that I can't have the 3D and the shadows and the fine lines and all that kind of stuff, because it just doesn't look good on a smaller image. So what I want to do is create an image that is somewhat similar, but has much less detail. So in this case, I have dropped the 3D, I've dropped the shadows, I've made the font bolder, etc. So it's basically the same image, like the same content, but it's just now put into a much more readable fashion for displaying in a small image. And this image I already have in the project, and it's actually just called logosmall.png. So if I put that in there and run the app, now we'll see that it's obvious that it's the same logo, the same semantic logo, but it's much easier to read because it's not trying to use all this fine detail. So we had a detailed asset that was very good to use when it was large. When we scaled it down small, it didn't look very good, so we redid a new asset. And this is what you'll want to do for your assets as well that have a lot of detail that you need to show in smaller spaces. So that's looking at the concept of detail level and effective resolution. Now let's go ahead and run this on the phone as well. So I'm going to go ahead and run this on the 6-inch phone. Let's put it back here. And again, this is a shared application. This HTML page is shared. Everything is shared, running both a Windows app and a Windows Phone app from the same content. And it looks basically the same. I have my image here, and I have my logo down here. And what you can't see, because of the way we're doing all these projectors, and these projectors aren't high resolution, et cetera, and you're sitting a long way away from them, is that the image that you see here, even the big tic-tac-toe image, is going to look a little bit blurry on the phone, right? And that's because the 6-inch phone is a 1080. This particular phone is a 6-inch 1080p phone, and the image, the tic-tac-toe image, has been stretched to fit the available space, and so it's got a little bit blurry, right? And so because this is a higher density device, I'm going to generate a new asset that's going to look much better on these higher density devices. And I'm going to do that in Photoshop as well. So let's go to Photoshop. And let's switch back to this one. And in this particular case, I'm going to burn the text 200 into the image because, again, the technology we're using doesn't let you see the difference between the low res and the high res image, because the projectors themselves are so low res. I'm just going to put 200 in there so that you can see the image has switched. So I'm going to take this and I'm going to save it for web, and I want it to be 600 pixels wide. The original image was 300 pixels wide. This is going to be twice as large, so on a twice as dense display, it ends up squishing to be the same size. And we're going to go ahead and save that. And we're going to call it, what are we going to call it? We're going to call it logolarge.scale200.png. And the scale 200 is a little bit of magic that Windows uses to load the most appropriate asset for the device that it's on. So you can have scale 100, scale 140, scale 200, scale 240, et cetera, et cetera. Android has a similar concept with their different DPI assets. iOS has a similar solution with their Retina assets. Windows uses this thing called Scale. I won't go into details because the mechanism is quite detailed and it's a talk in and of itself. But putting that Scale 200 inside the file name lets Windows know that it should use that asset on a higher density device. Again, not resolution, not size, but higher density device. So let's go ahead and add that to our project. Add existing item, Windows Phone Images, Scale 200 with a 200 in there. We'll go ahead and add that, and I will run this again. And it'll work, but we'll see a bug that we'll fix. So we run the app. Now we see that it picked up that 200 scale image, right? Twice the size. But you notice that it kind of blew the image out as well. It not only was it twice as dense, but it stretched it to be twice the physical size. And the reason here is that I didn't tell Windows how big the image should be. And this is something that you should always do when you're writing applications, whether it's HTML or XAML. You should always put the size that you want the image to be in effective pixels in your markup, so that when you do these things like add pixel doubled or pixel tripled images, it doesn't go ahead and make them gigantic. So if we go back to here and explicitly put width equals 300 and run it again, we will see that it now works. And the reason it gets confused is because MRT, which is the thing that knows scale 100 versus scale 200 versus any other scale, it knows that this particular device is a high-density device, therefore it should load the 200 scale asset. And then it hands the asset over to either HTML or XAML, depending on the host. But when HTML or XAML gets it, they lose that information about the fact that it was a scale 200 or a scale 100 device. They just see it's twice as big, and so they stretch it to be twice as big inside their inside the layout system. So it's very important to tell them what the correct size should be. They will then lay it out at the correct size, so 300 layout pixels, not effective pixels. But because it's twice the density of a normal display, you have 600 actual pixels, physical pixels, that have 600 image pixels, all in 300 layout pixels. So it gets very complicated, but the system takes care of it all for you. Again, the less you think about DPI and the less you think about resolution, the easier your life will be. So that's basically it for resolution and density and asset detail level. So if we recap quickly on what it takes to generate assets, first thing is determine what your desired layout size is in effective pixels. Right? So that first image was 300 effective pixels wide, and the smaller image was 100 effective pixels wide. Then you output that asset, and if you're using a universal app, you can put that asset in your shared project. So the original versions of those images were in my shared project. They're shared across Windows and Windows Phone. Next thing to do is go ahead and output one at a different resolution. Now, when I originally did these slides, I recommended doing 2.4, so 240% for the assets. That's still valid. You can still do 240%. We've since been looking at it, and we've decided that the extra file size of something that large really doesn't buy you anything. So 200 is probably good enough. The other benefit of 200 is that if you have a Retina asset for iOS or a high DPI asset for Android, you can just go ahead and reuse those. So the slide says 2.4. 2.4 is a perfectly good value. But for file size purposes and for reusing assets from other devices, 2.0 is just as good, basically. So then you output your asset at that size with the scale 200 or the scale 240 file name and put that in the phone only project, because as of today, Windows devices don't go that high, right? There isn't a Windows device that is that dense that we can run on. And then what you want to do is not what we did in this talk, which is view the images on a simulator on a projector that we're sitting, 15 feet away from. We want to run it on actual devices, and that's because that's the only way that you can know that for this device at this viewing distance with this density, with this, type of display technology, LCD versus OLED versus whatever, the image looks good, right? There's no way using the emulator on a desktop monitor that you can tell whether your actual customer is going to have a good experience with your application. You really need to test on target devices, right? So pick a few popular devices, run your app, make sure that your assets look good. You'll never be able to do that by just looking at the emulator. Of course, for simple graphics and so on, it doesn't matter. But if it's your company's logo and you want it to be stellar, then you actually have to look at it on a real device. And if it looks good, right, with the 100% normal asset and the 200% double asset or the 240% asset, you're done. Nothing else to do. But if it doesn't look particularly good to you on a particular device, you can try adding another scale factor. For example, the Surface Pro, the Microsoft Surface Pro, and the Surface 2 are devices that are naturally 140% devices. So you might think that the 100% asset or the 200% asset don't look quite right on a Surface, and you think that your customers are going to be using Surface devices. You might want to include a 1.4 scale asset as well, and it'll be perfectly crisp for that particular device. But again, only do that if it didn't look good in the first place. In many cases, just scaling up or down your 100 or 200 asset will work just fine. So that was scale factors and how relative density plays into scale factors. And finally, we want to talk about mastering of our assets. Now, you want to master your assets, so your the gold standard of your assets. You want to be at the highest practical resolution so that you can generate all these other assets and not lose fidelity. And ideally, you would use a vector format. So you would use SVG, or you would use Adobe Illustrator, or you would use something like that that uses vectors and preserves all of the fidelity of the image, no matter what size you make it. Now, if you can't use Illustrator, or you don't want to use Illustrator, or you're dealing with bitmap art, we recommend that you use a master bitmap that's at least 400% your expected size of your asset. So for the lower detail tic-tac-toe image that was 100 by 100, my master of that might be 400 by 400. And that's good enough, because even if we had a device that was more than 400% density, it's unlikely that any human would be able to tell the difference between 400% and scaled up to 500%. So 400% is good enough. It's a good trade-off between quality and size on disk. Right, because again, if you have a lot of these things and you master them all at huge resolutions, they're going to take up a lot of disk space, a lot of network bandwidth, et cetera. So vectors or bitmaps at least 400% scale. Export them at the right target, at the right scale factors when you need them. So start at 100%, add 200% or 240%, and then see if it looks good for you on all your devices. And don't forget about the detail level, so the DVD issue again. Especially if you're using vectors. So if you are using Illustrator, you might think, well, Illustrator will let me output this at any particular resolution that I want, and it'll preserve all the detail, and everything will look awesome. Unfortunately, if you have a lot of single pixel lines or very fine detail, as you get smaller and smaller images, effective size images, that detail is going to start blurring. It's going to start looking ugly. So even though you're mastering these things at 400% plus size, or in Illustrator where you can blow it up as big as you want, remember not to put too much detail into the asset if it's going to be shown at a small size on the screen. Otherwise, it'll be a blurry mess. And then finally, we have this guidance around giving us 100% asset and then a double asset or a 2.4 asset. But if you only have one, don't worry. The system will still work. Right, so if you have an original asset that someone made for you and you can't afford to build a new set of assets, or you've lost the designer on your team, or you're dealing with artwork that you bought or bitmaps, et cetera, and you physically can't generate a higher resolution asset, don't worry about it. The system will still work. It'll take your low-res asset and it'll just blow it up to be the right size and the right density on any particular target device. It just won't look as good or as crisp as if you had the right asset, the higher resolution asset. But don't worry about it. So that's layout and assets, the two main things we need to think about when building apps that run across different Windows devices. And so this is the point in the talk where I kind of say, well, we've looked at some Blender demos and we've looked at some Photoshop demos, but we haven't really looked at much Visual Studio Code. And what's the point of a developer talk if you're not going to talk about code? And the real thing, the real point of this talk is that you shouldn't worry about code. Right? I've said time and time again, don't worry about resolution, don't worry about DPI, don't worry about viewing distance, because the system takes care of all these things. Right? Worry about effective resolution, and if you use something like the helper library that you can get off my blog, then you don't have to write a single line of code to do any of those things. You can do it all inside the designer. Or if you're using HTML and JavaScript, you can do it all with CSS. Right? So you really shouldn't have to think about code. And if you're down deep in the code worrying about width and height and DPI and all that kind of stuff, you're probably doing it wrong, and you're probably causing yourself a lot of issues that you wouldn't have if you just stepped back and just said, I don't need to worry about this. But if you do need to know about it, and there are cases where you do need to know about it, there is a type, a WinRT type, called display information, and you call a static method getForCurrentView, and this will give you a display information object with some useful properties on it. And the first one is resolution scale, and this one is exposed in Windows. And this is the one that tells you if the device you're on is a 100 scale device, a 140 scale device like a Surface Pro, or a 180 scale device. And so if you needed to know that, if you were doing your own loading of assets, for example, and you weren't using the specially named PNG files, you might use this information. For Windows Phone, we have a property called raw pixels per view pixel. This is essentially the same as the resolution scale. It has the same purpose, which is to tell you what scale factor the device is, but it's a double rather than an enum. And the reason we did this is that Windows only had three, 100, 140, 180. Windows Phone added a lot more because we actually have a broader variety of devices than Windows does. And an enum didn't make sense anymore, so we just decided to move it to a double. Windows will move to a double in the future, so long-term, raw pixels per view pixel is the property to use. But these are both if you really need to know how many physical dots on the screen make up one of those effective pixels. Typically, if you're doing your own asset resolution, or for example, if you're running video, and you want to know, is this, you know, should I send 720p video, 1080p video, or, you know, 480p standard def? These are the kind of properties you'd use. Next is DPI. We have raw DPI X and raw DPI Y. Typically, they'll be exactly the same, modulo margin of error, because all our modern devices have square pixels. And for the most part, you should ignore these. They're useful if you need to draw something that maps to the real world. So, for example, if you're drawing a ruler, making a ruler application, and you want to draw 1 inch or 1 centimeter things on the screen, great, use this feature. Excuse me. Or if you're building an app like for, a hardware store, and you want to show, you know, a 2 inch screw or a, you know, 3/8 inch something or other, and you want to put it on the screen so the customer can hold up their screw with the one on the screen to make sure they're ordering the right one, then this is for you. But if you're not building something that actually has to map to the real world, you should ignore this property. And one example is, let's say you're working with a client or a designer, and they say, I want this button to be an inch high. The first thing you should ask them after that is, an inch high on what reference device? Right? Because an inch high on my phone is quite usable. An inch high on one of these projectors is unusable. Right? You very rarely want to know actually the size of things in inches. You really just want to know effective resolution. And then finally, there's a property called logical DPI. It sounds useful, but don't use it. Unless you're doing DirectX interop or otherwise working with legacy code that really does believe that the device is 96 dots per inch, no matter what it really is, you should avoid using this property at all. It has a shiny object name. You want to touch it, but you shouldn't use this feature. It's really there for DirectX interop. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is a little bit of information for developers moving from Windows Phone XAML Silverlight, so what I showed at the first half of the talk, the very start of the talk, to to XAML, the new world. Because something has changed. If you were a Silverlight developer, something has changed when you move from Silverlight to XAML. Now, if we look at the picture on the screen here, we have a 5-inch phone and a 10-inch tablet. And the tablet is approximately twice the size in both directions, right? Twice as wide, twice as high. And the tablet, minimum resolution for Windows on a tablet is 768 pixels high. And so if the phone is about half the size of the tablet, width and height, that means that its effective resolution, minimum effective resolution, should be half of what Windows' is. So 384 pixels high in effective resolution. Now, this is convenient. This isn't exactly the way the system works, but this is a convenient simplification of the way the system works. But the math is correct. So on Windows Phone devices, if you're a Silverlight developer, you were used to always getting 480 pixels wide on any device. If you remember in the demo at the beginning of the talk, it was always 480 by 853 pixels. If you move from Silverlight to Windows XAML, then your notions of an app being 480 pixels wide minimum are no longer true. 384 pixels is now the minimum size for a Windows Phone XAML application. So if we take, for example, the Lumia 920, which is this phone here, in Silverlight, the previous UI framework, the physical resolution of the device is 768 by 1280. That's what the panel is. Silverlight will tell you that it's a 1.6 scale device and that its effective resolution is 480 by 800. Right? And that's what every Silverlight phone developer knows and loves. And everything is designed around that. And as I showed earlier, if you upgrade to 8.1 but stay in Silverlight, that's still true. But if you move to XAML or you move to HTML, obviously the physical resolution doesn't change. But the scale factor does change. It's now a 2.0 scale device in the new universal app world. And the effective resolution is 384 by 640. And by doing this, we make it very easy for you to move, to abstract away all these things and think in terms of effective resolution, regardless of phone, tablet, PC, television, et cetera. So that's why we made this change, moving from Silverlight to XAML. And the net result of this is if you have existing UI in Silverlight and you have hard-coded pixel values like width equals 100, multiply them by 0.8, so now width equals 80, when you copy and paste them into your new XAML projects, and they will look just the same as they did before. So that's a technical thing we did in order to help you migrate across phones, tablets, PCs, et cetera. And there's one more thing I want to show you I've been telling you to, not think about resolution, not think about DPI, not think about size, all those kind of things. And let's say that you thought you had a really good reason for ignoring all my advice and actually going ahead and determining the size of the device, determining the resolution of the device, and doing this stuff yourself. There's still one pitfall that you have. And unfortunately, I can't demo it to you because of the technology that we're on here, because of the resolution of these devices here. But I can show you I can talk to what would happen. The user can have a device, and it can be a particular size and a particular density, and Windows can think the thing should be a particular size. But the user is always in control. So they might go ahead and, using settings, they might go ahead and I can't show you because we're projecting right now, but they might go ahead and tell Windows whatever you thought the right size of things was, I need them to be bigger. Right? Maybe I have poor eyesight, or maybe I sit a long way away from my monitor, or maybe I have any other reason for wanting things to be bigger. And so the user might go ahead and invalidate everything you thought was true about the resolution and size and DPI, et cetera, of the device by saying, forget all that, my personal preference is that things should be 50% bigger or 75% bigger. And we'll take that into account. When we tell you effective resolution, we'll take all that into account. But if you're trying to compute these things behind the scenes yourself, you'll end up building an app that doesn't conform to the user's preferences. So that's kind of one more reason why you should forget about all the physical information and just focus on the effective resolution that Windows is telling you. So, wrapping up, one of the things that I think is very important in this space and in all spaces, is using the right words, because you know, the way we talk, the way we think in words kind of guides what we think is possible and the way that we interact with the world. And so when you're thinking about projects, or when you're talking to customers or clients or designers or anybody else, and you're talking about the layout of your app or the assets in your application, you want to be talking in terms of the effective size, right? The general shape of the app, the scale factor of the asset that you're going to be producing. Right? These are the things that will lead you down the path of success. Modulo the very rare circumstances, like drawing the ruler on the screen, you really, really, really don't want to be thinking in terms of what's the resolution of the device, or what's the diagonal size of the device, or what's the DPI of the device, or what's the orientation of the device. In most cases, if you think about in that way, or you start conversing with people in that way, you'll lead yourself down a path that will cause you pain and make it harder for you to scale from 4 to 40 inches. So really start thinking about these more abstract terms and let Windows do the heavy lifting for you of abstracting away all the details. So once you're using the right words and you're talking in the right way, then the next thing to do is you want to architect your app for a flexible layout. So just like this simple tic-tac-toe game, we want to build our component parts, build them as shared controls, and then use them in the Windows app or the Windows Phone app to compose the right set of UI for those particular devices. And again, you can use similar concepts in HTML and JavaScript as well. And then really do just let the layout system work for you. Again, I said if you're deep down in the code, writing layout code, you're probably doing it wrong unless you have some very specific requirements, right? Just let Blend and Visual State Management do the layout for you and focus on other things, like building the right set of assets, right? So start with some high-resolution masters, either vectors or, you know, 400% or plus bitmaps. Generate the scale factors you need. And then don't go crazy and build, you know, the 100% asset, 120% asset, 140% asset, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Don't go crazy and generate all those assets and waste all your time and your disk space doing that. Only generate the ones that you need, right? If it looks good enough, don't worry with the rest. And make sure that your detail level is appropriate, so you don't jam too much detail into a small picture or not enough detail into a large picture. So there are a bunch of other talks at TechEd. These all happened in the past, so you'll have to watch them online. But these are things talking about universal apps or about design. There is some related content. The first link here is to that Silverlight app I showed you that lets Silverlight applications opt in to knowing about screen size and resolution for the cases where they need it. The layout rules code sample, which is the rules-based layout system that I used earlier, is there as well. And finally, I had a blog post recently about how to build the optimum, how to put optimum emulator sizes on your screen so that they are the right relative size. So if you notice, when I go to my laptop and let me unsplit the screen and I put these two side by side, this is a 4-inch emulator and this is a 6-inch emulator. These are actually the right relative size relative to each other if they would be if they were two physical devices. And so my blog has the math you need to do to set the right zoom factor on these things when you go click here and zoom. It tells you how to pick the right values, which is important if you're trying to do side-by-side comparisons in the emulator. And then I will be at the expo hall later today, 12:30 till about 3 o'clock, then I have to leave for my flight. I'm sure you've seen these 100 times already this week because they're probably on every slide. There's some URLs you can go here for further resources. There's some more resources you've probably seen 100 times. And you've probably also heard that if you evaluate the session, you enter to win prizes. And evaluations really are very important to us because they help us know what's working well, what's not working well, what level of content we should be providing, you know, are we doing a good job as speakers, as presenters, all that kind of stuff. And it helps us make the conference better for you if you come back next year or your colleagues, even if you don't come back. Giving us the feedback helps it make it better for them. So please go ahead, scan this QR code, and evaluate the session online. And I'll leave that up, as that's the end of the talk. And we have about 10 minutes. If anybody has questions, please use the mics. Any questions? Okay, well, if you don't have any questions, I'll be here for about 10 minutes if you want to talk privately, and I'll be at the expo hall later today under the... We're under the blue Windows thing, but there's a purple developer board. So that's where I'll be. Oh, yeah, thank you. Okay, so the question was, does the layout rules work with WPF? You could make it work with WPF as written. It's just for the new Windows XAML store apps. But it's pretty basic C# code. You could take it and modify it to work on WPF as well. No worries, thank you. Yeah, the question was whether the layout rules I showed would work inside a WPF application. And the answer is you could probably take the code and compile it and fix any errors to work in WPF. The concepts are all the same. It has visual state management. It has, you know, sizes, et cetera. Just the code as is designed for Windows Store apps. But it's pretty straightforward C# code. There's nothing rocket science about it. Yeah.